music is from Etude Fantastique by Ida Presti. It's played by the composer and her husband, Alexandra Lagoya, the renowned Presti and Lagoya classical guitar duo. This pair were at the height of their popularity in 1967 when Ida Presti suddenly died. She was 43 years old. This program is a reminiscence about Ida Presti by Alice Arzt, her student and close friend, now herself an internationally recognized guitarist. Miss Arzt supplied many of the rare old recordings you'll hear in the next hour. For A Guitarist's Fancy, I'm Richard Starr. Like to study with Ida Presti?
Well, it was wonderful to study with Ida Presti. She was one of the most marvelous people I've ever encountered. One of these people that when they walk into the room, you're sort of surrounded by a warm glow. Just an extraordinary person and a very, very good teacher. Very good at seeing what you were trying to do and helping you to do it and making you very aware of both the fact that she was very, very fine and also the fact that everyone was just people. Very down-to-earth, lovely, wonderful person. And, of course, I got a great deal from her, both in terms of inspiration, musicality, and, of course, my whole technique is very much based on the one that she taught.
Ida Presti is half the Presti and Lagoya duo, who are legendary. But she was an extraordinary soloist in her own right.
Oh, yes, very much so. Ever since a very, very young age. She started playing the guitar at age 5, I believe, and made her Paris debut at the Salle Pleyel at age 10, and was heralded as the female Mozart or the female Chopin or some such thing. She was really quite unbelievable, even at that age. Also, of course, she had one of the most round, beautiful tones imaginable, and certainly, I think, the most beautiful tone of any guitarist, and the most flexibility of sound. Also played so spontaneously. She had a sort of thing that I've never seen in any other guitarist, no matter how good they were. She played the way other people talk. In other words, there was nothing that she could think that didn't come out automatically through her fingers, with just nothing in between at all. She played the way the very, very best, say, jazz clarinetists would play, that they're just speaking to you, that just any crazy thing, any intervals, any sort of thing whatsoever automatically just came out. I have a very interesting tape of Presti and Lagoya rehearsing before a concert in, I think, someplace in Holland, and it was done by a friend of mine who I think just plonked a tape recorder underneath one of their chairs or something while they were trying to figure out what they were going to play for encores and doing a little practicing, a little fooling around. And much of the time while they're talking, you hear in the background this sort of arpeggiation and just running around scales, you know, kind of stuff. And Presti's busy talking, and she's just playing. She's just sort of thinking there, and her fingers are just flying around, making these fantastic, beautiful, terribly fast. I mean, something that anyone else would have to study for 100 years to get with that kind of flexibility. And she was just doing it without even thinking she was doing anything. She also took pride in being able to sight read just about anything at any speed. And she was kind of cute because she was very modest about it. And I remember when I first got my hands on the guitar part of the Fantasia para un Gentilhombre, which is not an easy piece and certainly nothing that most people would want to try to sight read. And she hadn't seen the music before and she hadn't heard the piece. And so when I got the music, I had it over at her house in Paris, and I plunked it down in front of her, and she grabbed a guitar and started reading through the thing at full speed and sounding, you know, like anybody else's performance. And she got through about halfway through the piece, and she looked up with a kind of mischievous grin. She said, "Je déchiffre, moi, you know, I'm sight reading, you know," and then went on and tore through the rest of the thing. very, very remarkable. Nothing in between what's going on in her head and what came out. Just absolutely like talking.
Where was Ida Presti born?
She was born in Suresnes, which I understand is near Paris. She was born Yvette Montagnon. And Presti, or Lo Presti, I believe, was her mother's maiden name. And the Ida, I guess she was Yvette Ida Montagnon. So she took the name Ida Presti and has been known by that ever since she was a little girl, I think. Her career at first went quite well because her father was busy helping her. And her whole family must have been a very warm, nice family. And they all had to be terribly careful to let her practice enough and sort of kowtow to her a little bit because they knew that she was something very special. And she tells a funny story about her sister one time being in a room that she was in a room in between the room her sister was in, and the bathroom was on the other side of the room. And the sister, I think, went on the floor, a little kid of five or something, rather than dare walk through the room that Presti was busy practicing in at age eight. So they were very aware of what they had there in that family, and her father kept a scrapbook and promoted her career quite a lot. But then he died, I think, when she was only about 13 or 14. And at that point, her career took a nosedive because she was never one to blow her own horn at all. And so once there was no one else to do it for her, she just sort of sat playing better than anyone else, and nobody sort of knew about it. And then she had an unfortunate marriage relatively early, I think, to an Italian who apparently was terribly jealous that she was so marvelous and so famous and so forth, and he wasn't. And there are a few horror stories around that he tried to break her fingers or, you know, do things to her so that she wouldn't be able to play. And I don't know exactly how long all of that lasted, but she did have a daughter by that marriage, who is Elisabeth Lagoya, and who teaches in Paris the guitar, and who is also very beautiful and looks very much like Presti, and is a very fine guitarist in her own right now, though she's never made a career. But then Presti and Lagoya met, and evidently, I think this was just after she had gotten divorced from this other husband, and Lagoya had just broken up with a girlfriend that he'd been going with for a while. And then they met each other, and as Lagoya said, it became clear that they were absolutely made for each other. And I think they got married quite quickly thereafter. And that gave Presti back someone to do the horn blowing, because Lagoya is very good at that, and very good at writing letters and pestering people and trying to get concerts, and doing all the nitty-gritty stuff of arranging things that Presti didn't want to be bothered about. And of course, in exchange, he got lessons, and he got inspiration, and he got probably a heck of a lot better at playing the guitar than he had been before, trying to keep up with her. That would be quite a job, I think, for anyone to keep up with somebody like Presti. And he managed to do it, which is no small accomplishment.
Ida Presti was playing guitar at the age of five.
Mm-hmm.
Who was her first teacher?
Well, her father played sort of honky-tonk piano, I gather, and maybe fooled around with the guitar a little bit. So he perhaps taught her a little bit in the beginning, but she almost didn't really have a real teacher, which is probably how she fell into this right-hand side of the nail style of playing, because no one told her that that wasn't the way to do it. She did certainly have a lot of influence from André Verdier, who was the head of Les Amis de la Guitare in France, and who had a large library of music, which all got willed to Presti and Lagoya upon his death, and certainly she got a lot of information, a lot of music from him, but you could never call him really, I think, a teacher of hers. A little later on, I think it's probably pretty clear that she did have some contact with Miguel Jobet, and probably studied with him to some degree. And you can see the influence in the playing. And whether or not anyone of Presti's stature really needed a teacher other than her own very marvelous ears is probably a moot point. But there was probably some instruction going on there. Her records at age 11, age 12, age 13 are already unbelievably sophisticated musically and unbelievably strong technically. You think, my gosh, this little kid must be eating steaks three times a day to play the way she did. And in fact, when I first heard one of these early records of a Bach piece. It was at her house, and people had been telling me about this recording, and I hadn't heard it before, and she put it on and sort of sat there watching everyone's expression, you know. And after the record finished, I looked at her and I said, "But you haven't improved anything since then." She was just phenomenal, even at that age. Incredible. Presti was playing this so gloriously. Presti was with practically no money, no food, no nothing. Her family, her father had died. I think her mother had too, perhaps, at that time. And she's sort of wandering the streets of Paris with no support. And she met Segovia and played for him. And the word is that he sort of patted her on the head and said, "Yes, well, little girl, very good, go practice," kind of thing, and ran the other direction as fast as he could go. And you can kind of see how this would be a rather scary phenomenon to see this little kid who was really playing musically right up at the top of what any human being should ever be expected to do. And here the great maestro is confronted with this adversary there, which he viewed as such at the time. You can sympathize with him. I mean, there really maybe wasn't room for two guitarists at the time. But they became good friends later on. Presti and Lagoy played in New York about 4 or 5 years before her death. And Segovia came to the concert and went back and sort of said, "You're wonderful, you're marvelous, you know, let's be friends," kind of thing. And they made up and were very good friends toward the end of her life. So that was a nice thing to have happened, particularly since she died so much sooner than anyone ever would have thought she would have done.
Was there a tradition of guitar duos before Presti and Lagoya got together?
To a certain degree there was. Soar and Aguado, of course, had done duos together, and that was who most of Soar's duos were written for, or I think probably all of them, with the possible exception of L'Encouragement, that was for a student and his teacher. And much more recently, Jobet and Marie-Louise Anido had played together. There was some tradition, but not a very strong one, so that when Presti and Lagoya first got together, there wasn't a great, enormous pile of music to be played, and that's where Lagoya's talents as an arranger came in. He was willing to sit on his tail for hours and hours and hours arranging quantities of music, and of course going and pestering other composers to write pieces for them. One interesting thing is that not only they tried to get just duos, but a lot of duo concertos as well. And it was, of course, for them that Rodrigo wrote the Concerto Madrigal at first. And then, unfortunately, Presti died before they could perform it. So then he decided to give it to the Romeros afterwards. But Lagoya had originally paid for that piece.
Well, were Presti and Lagoya the first modern guitar duo of any note?
I would say so, unless you count Llopet Danido. But they, I think, just did it as sort of a sideline in their already major careers as soloists, whereas Presti and Lagoya were basically a duo. And once they started really doing duos and getting known as that, they generally didn't play solos. They did in the very beginning, and there are a few old RCA records around where you do have Lagoya playing one solo and Presti playing one solo, and then everything else on the record being duos. But I think it was felt... Probably, I suspect, the reasoning was that if they played solos as well as duos, it would be seen as a sort of a comparison thing. And I think with Presti and Lagoya, Presti probably viewed that as a rather dangerous thing. And in deference to the duo and to the marriage, I think they decided that it'd be better if they just stuck to duos where you couldn't really tell so well who was better and who wasn't so good.
Well, the result of that was that they became fused into a unit that was almost inseparable.
Oh,
that was
a
singularity.
Yeah, well, their playing was very worked out and very together. And the interpretations musically and technically were very well integrated. This was mostly a matter of Presti's sort of determining what it should be like. She was the one who made the final decisions about the interpretations, but you would never have known that watching them in public, but you did find that out listening to them practicing in private.
How would you describe the sound of Presti and Lagoya? What was special about them?
Very, very, very warm, and very, very rich, and very, very round. They were fanatic about warmth and roundness of sound, and about not having anything too rough or metallic, unless you wanted a metallic. I think this boils down to wanting enough variety. First, wanting a big enough sound to be able to really do battle with pianists and violinists and so forth, and then wanting to have enough variety. And I believe that they felt, and I certainly do feel, that the guitar having such a relatively small volume compared with a lot of instruments has to make up for that by having as much tone color as possible. In other words, rather than doing crescendos in terms of just getting louder, you can also do crescendos in terms of changing your tone color somewhat and give the impression you're doing a much bigger crescendo than you really are doing. And then, of course, you've got to be able to play really loud enough to do a decent crescendo in the first place. So they were very much fanatic about sound in ways that no other teacher or no other guitarist that I've encountered has been. And they made all their students fanatic, too.
What was it like to watch them perform?
Well, better than any of the records, really. Presti had a fantastic stage presence, and Lagoya does too to a degree, but Presti particularly just had something that got through to the audience that just isn't there on the records. Presti was just so flexible looking and so easy. Everything just came out so naturally, and her hands were such a delight to watch because they just kind of flowed around so loosely. It is just incredible to see her play, and then the warmth of her personality was so extraordinary that I've never seen anyone else that's given that sort of an impression on stage. Very rare.
Thank you.
Now, you spent a great deal of time with them when they were touring in this country.
Yeah, well, I used to spend just about all the time I could with them, and generally practically camped out in their hotel room whenever they were in New York. And I was very lucky in that I almost felt as though I were another daughter of Presti's. In fact, at one point she said that her daughter, Elizabeth, was jealous of me, you know, that I was her American daughter and Elizabeth was her French daughter. So I felt a very special relationship, and I'm glad I took advantage of it because, of course, no one knew she was going to die so young. But we used to have marvelous times. We'd go out and buy barbecue chickens and watch horror movies on TV. In fact, this was how Presti was learning English. She loved this kind of Dracula sort of movie. And during the commercials, she would sit eating our sandwiches or our chickens or whatever. She would sit and tell me what had happened so far to make sure she'd got the plot right. LaGoya usually wasn't quite so good at that, but he was actually studying English, and he would take me into a corner every once in a while and go through the I am, you are, he is, she is, and try to learn all of that stuff. Presti never bothered with that. She just watched movies on TV, and she got very good. Both of them did, really. Their English was quite good.
Ida Presti's death was a surprise and a shock to a great many people.
It was a surprise and a shock to everyone, I think, and particularly to LaGoya. It was absolutely unexpected. They had played in St. Louis, and then she had started coughing up some blood, and I think they went to a doctor there, and they couldn't find anything the matter with her, but said, you know, let's have you stay in the hospital overnight, and we'll see what's going on. And I'm sure they protested, but we have a concert in Rochester tomorrow. We can't stay here. So they said, well, okay, you know, go, but be careful. And apparently on the plane that next day, she started coughing up more blood and was, I think, rushed from the airport to the hospital in Rochester, which fortunately was a very good one. They had quite a lot of specialists working on her, but they weren't able to save her. And I think it was probably an aneurysm of some sort, though I don't know for sure. But at any rate, it did start with the coughing up of blood, and there was a great deal of internal bleeding. And by that evening, then she was dead. And how I found out about it was I had been teaching in my mother's house, which is outside of New York, and I had been planning on going back to New York just that that evening. In fact, I was halfway out of the door when the phone rang. And I picked up the phone, and it was Lagoya. And I said, oh, comment ça va? How are you? He said, pas très bien, Ida est morte. And that was it. Not very well. Ida is dead. And I thought he was crazy at first. I thought he had to be out of his mind. He said, you have to get a lot of money and come to Rochester. I thought, what's this, you know? So he told me to call his agent, and what I did first was I called back the hospital in Rochester to find out if he'd gone out of his mind or something, because it didn't make any sense. So then I rushed back to New York as fast as I could go and called up the agent, finally tracked him down at his house, and he couldn't provide any money, so what I did was I took money out of my account, and I called another good friend of theirs, who was also a student, Bunyan Webb, who actually has died now since. But anyway, he was in Memphis, Tennessee, and I called him up, and I told him what had happened, and I said, I think perhaps you'd better come too, because I thought Lagoya should have a man that could stay with him that he could talk to as well. So he came up with everything he could drag out of his savings account, I guess, and we, the two of us, met in the airport in New York and flew up to Rochester and sort of bailed Lagoya out and tried to help any way we could. But it was an amazing experience and not anything anyone expected or believed could have happened, including Lagoya, and it took the stuffing out of him for quite a while. He didn't play anything for a month or so after, and didn't do concerts for a good year, at least. And his whole personality changed to some degree after that, because she was his whole life, completely. And just suddenly it wasn't there anymore. One of Presti's favorite pieces was an andante from the second violin sonata. And this was almost her theme song in certain ways, and she played it very beautifully in quite a romantic way. And this piece was so much attached to her name and her memory that it was the piece that was played at her funeral in Paris, and is very moving, played by her. Thank you.
Ida Presti was a composer as well as a guitarist.
Yes. She was particularly an improviser, and I think most of her compositions do sound more like written down improvisations than anything else. As I said before, she played everything very fluently and fluidly and could play absolutely anything she could think. And she had been known to just go to town and sit down and just play things, you know, that didn't happen to have been written by anyone else before, but that sounded as though they had been for hours and hours and hours, particularly late at night, or if she'd had a glass of wine or something. So most of her compositions are very much in that sort of vein. And she wrote one piece that was an homage to Béla Bartók called La Angoisse, which is very much in the same spirit. It's for duo guitar, but it would be, if Lagoya and she could both improvise the way she could and would both do it at the same time in a sort of a Béla Bartók Hungarian way, then this would be the piece that would result.
Thank you.
Presti's fingers were about as fast as anyone's, and the interesting thing is that she went very fast with still a very big round sound, which very often when you get very fast guitarists, the sound tends to deteriorate, and the faster they go, the softer they get. She didn't do that. The faster she got, she was just as loud as she was when she was playing very slowly and gently. So this next piece, which was written by Emilio Purol, which was called Guajira, she called Evocación Cubaine. I'm not quite sure where she got that title from. This recording was made quite early in her career. I'm not sure exactly when, but perhaps even in her teens, and has a lot of pyrotechnical things, including a rather spectacular left-hand scale that she rattles through at a pace that most people wouldn't manage, and shows a little bit about how a pretty young French kid could get around on the guitar. Thank you. Another piece that she played particularly well and with a warmth that I've never heard anyone else equal was the Andante Largo of Fernando Sor, Opus 5. And this I have heard her play in person some. This recording also is quite an early one when she had first just met Lagoya and was one of the very first records that they made together, and this was on the record as a solo of Ida Presti.
Thank you.
think one of the most interesting things about her that she told me a couple of years before she died was her, what she called her devise, which the only translation in English is her motto, but that sounds kind of crude compared with the French devise. It would be what you'd have on your coat of armor or something like that. And I think it's a very beautiful one. It's, je vais faire de ma vie une chose simple et droite comme un roseau, vide afin que Dieu l'emplisse de musique. Which means, I wish to make of my life a thing straight like a reed, hollow so that God may fill it with music. And that's exactly what she did. Very remarkable woman.
You are listening to Malat's Serenata Espagnole, in a recording made by Ida Presti in the early 1930s when she was in her early teens. This program has been a reminiscence about Ida Presti by Alice Arzt. The musical selections used in the order of presentation were Etude Fantastique by Ida Presti, played by the Presti and Lagoya duo, Courante from Johann Sebastian Bach's Third Cello Suite, Tango in D Major of Isaac Albéniz, arranged for two guitars by Lagoya, Andante from the Second Sonata for Solo Violin of Johann Sebastian Bach, La Angoisse by Ida Presti, played by the duo, Evocation Cubain, also known as Guajira, by Emilio Pujol, and the Andante Largo, Opus No. 5, of Fernando Sor. All the solo guitar pieces were performed by Ida Presti. Many thanks are due to Alice Arzt for help in the production of this program, not only for the interview, but for supplying rare recordings that would otherwise be unavailable. This program was produced in the studios of Vermont Public Radio. Your producer and announcer is Richard Starr. Thank you.